You're listening to the Right Turn Radio podcast.
Back to school, Woody. When I was a kid, it seemed like summer vacation lasted forever, and then you get so depressed and bummed out going back to school. But it's the topic of our show tonight.
Exactly.
It's back to school. It's back to school time for 20 million high schoolers across the country. Did you know, Woody, 1 in 5 teenagers in America meets the medical criteria for addiction?
Wow.
Yeah, 1 in 5.
Well, we have to think about that.
Yeah, it's big. 9 out of 10 high schoolers say their classmates are drugging, drinking, and smoking during the school day. And almost half know a student who's selling drugs at school. High school students say that about 17% of their classmates drug, drink, and smoke during the school day. And for the 6th straight year and for 7 of the past 8 years, 60% of high school students say that they attend a drug-infected school where drugs are used, kept, or sold on school grounds. I mean, it's got to be really difficult to be a teenager these days with social media, there's a lot of pressure in the entertainment industry. There's, drugs have become normalized in our society. It's different than when older guys like you and I were growing up, where it wasn't a mainstream thing. Now we have a president who admitted to smoking marijuana. Mm. It's a different world, right?
It's a different world, but as a parent, John, because we're both parents.
That's correct.
And I'm sending my kid back to school next week. He's a young guy, but he's kind of in that early stage. I remember not that long ago when the national average of young people that would be exposed to substance use for the first time was 14. But it's younger than that now.
Yeah.
It's 12.
That's scary.
It's scary as a parent.
So tonight's show...
That's a segue for you, John.
That's where I'm segueing. Tonight's show is about drug and alcohol use at school. There are approximately 25,000 high schools in America, only 25 of which are dedicated sober high schools. Tonight we're talking about the challenges teenagers face as they return to school this week and the options out there for kids who are addicted. We have two amazing guests with us tonight, Woody. On the phone, we have Kristen Johnson. You know who she is. She's a fantastic two-time Emmy Award-winning actress, well-known for her role as Sally on Third Rock from the Sun. Loved that show. And the New York Times best-selling author of Guts, which is a great book. It's her memoir about her addiction to drugs and alcohol and her recovery. It's really good. Kristen's also the founder of and executive director of SLAM, a foundation dedicated to creating a sober high school in New York City. Kristen joins us on the phone from New York. Hi, Kristen. How are you?
I'm actually from Connecticut right now.
Oh.
Wow.
I stand corrected.
You're close by.
My phone connection kind of sucks.
John, she was also on Sex in the City.
Oh, and I'm also on a little TV show called The Exes right now.
Excellent.
Anyway. But you did a lovely job.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Let's talk about our other guest that we have here in the studio with us, Michelle Lipinski. Who is?
Hi, Kristen.
She's the principal of the Beverly Recovery High School.
North Shore,
excuse me.
We need you on this show.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just looking at her face because she's an old friend of mine. I should go to my notes. Excuse me, the North Shore Recovery High School in Beverly.
Right.
Okay, I stand corrected. and it's the first Recovery High School on the East Coast. Is that correct?
Yeah, we opened 8 years ago, and then Boston Ostagai High School opened about a few months later, 3 months later.
Were you the person who started it there?
I was the person who started it. I started it all. Yes.
She started it all. They gave her a room, and they said, build a school.
She's brilliant. I've actually gone up there and spent a lot of time with the kids, with her, at the school, because they're sort of our sister school. They're kind of our inspiration for what we want in New York City. And I've just never seen anyone deal with people the way she does, and students and the parents, and how graduates come back every day to hang out and encourage the kids. And it's just an amazing, amazing place.
So, Kristen,
yeah.
What made you want to create a sober high school in New York City?
Well, when I went to rehab, which was six and a half years ago now, I walked in, a little bit drunk, and I thought the guy had dropped me off accidentally at a camp. I mean, everyone was under the age of 25. There were, a couple 35-year-old smokers huddling in terror. But for the most part, it was a kid. And so I just thought it was so weird. And a few days later, I asked my counselor, and I will never forget what she said. I mean, she looked at me and she just said, with this look in her eyes, this is what all rehabs look like now. So, okay. Then I get back to New York and I become friends with Joe Schrank, who is this amazing, interventionist, and he's, with the young people, recovery. He's just an incredible guy. Michelle knows him really well, too. And he and I became friends. And he said, there's no recovery high school in New York City. And I just thought that was the dumbest thing I'd ever heard in my life. Like, New York is the leader. It should be. It should be like the place where everything begins.
Right.
And so, and then when I found out that Massachusetts has four, and that there, there's just no excuse. And also when you hear the stats of if a kid goes to rehab and goes back to a regular school, some ridiculous number like 90%, relapse within the first, few months. But if a kid goes to a recovery high school, 70% graduate drug and alcohol free.
Wow.
I want to go to Michelle because Michelle, I kind of want to ask you the same type of. I want to ask Michelle the same type of question, and that is, we know that you got into, you established the recovery high school 8 years ago, but can you walk us through that? What was the experience like?
Well, I was running an alternative school in Salem, Massachusetts, and I
talk
saw.
Talk louder.
I was running a recovery school in Salem, Massachusetts, and what I saw happening at that level was the students came into school and they looked different, and I've been in education by that time for about 10 or 12 years, and I just saw the student population change with maybe the introduction of pharmaceuticals, mm-hmm. as well as maybe the decriminalization and kind of the attitude towards using drugs at school. It changed. It changed between the 90s and 2000s. So
you could tell that substance use was playing a part in their behavior.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I didn't even know what OxyContin was until one of my students, I had obviously had to search a lot of students. And one student at one point in time refused to give me his backpack. And when he gave me his backpack and I found, what was inside of it was a couple of pill cases full of about 100 OxyContin. I didn't know what it was, so I called the police like I would usually do. And there were 9 squad cars that showed up because the police knew what it was. I had no idea what a street value was. So soon after was when we started seeing heroin and track marks. And part of my job at that point in time was checking a bunch of my kids for track marks. And so that's not something you really get taught in graduate school when you're teaching biology and chemistry. So I saw what was happening. And then concurrently, my superintendent at that time, Dr. Herbert Levine, his son also came out about his own drug addiction. And so he pushed me towards working with the Department of Public Health to start and the North Shore Education Consortium, which is kind of my parent organization, to start the school.
So how was the funding? How did the funding play into that? Was this difficult to come by?
Well, there was, once again, I think all of the stars were in alignment at the time. Mm-hmm. Willie Ostaguy, who's a big EAP firefighter here from Boston, along with Senator Steve Tolman. A lot of this happened.
One of my heroes.
Me too.
And Judge Zimian.
I don't know who you're speaking about.
He was a legislator here in Massachusetts, and once again, it was the Lieutenant Governor, Kerry Healy.
Oh, everything... I knew about the Lieutenant Governor. I just didn't know about the other woman.
I'll give you a list, Kristen.
Oh, good. No, I like it when people politically active.
So that's the only reason it happened. And then under Michael Botticelli at the Bureau of Substance Abuse Services, they all kind of came in together and were...
Michael Botticelli, who is now gone away to Washington, D.C., and we're so happy that he's there. Because he's going to make a big difference,
a huge
difference for our nation. We're very proud of all of our accomplishments here in Massachusetts. And Michael Botticelli and people like yourself are a part of that. Michelle is the principal of a recovery high school here in Beverly. And so, Michelle, if you could please take a minute and walk me through. You've been running this recovery high school for 8 years. Walk me through it. What does a recovery high school look like?
Well, you know, I think it looks a little bit different than a typical high school. It's a lot smaller. We worked with 86 students last year. And I'm really comfortable talking about my high school, my recovery high school, because there's four in Massachusetts. And I want to make it really clear that we're all a little bit different, but we all have the same essence. We all work with the same students. For a student to come to my school, they have to have a diagnosis of abuse or dependence, for substance use or dependence. And it could be diagnosed from somebody through the courts. It could be diagnosed with somebody from a primary care, whatever that looks like. A typical day, they take regular classes, as John was just asking about curriculum. Their access to the curriculum is all the Common Core curriculum that they have through the Department of Education. And so they're experiencing that, but they also one period a day have some type of a wellness curriculum. And that focuses on whether it has to do with drugs and alcohol, maybe it has to do with mindfulness, of getting back into a regular routine, relationships. But every single day, they're working through some type of a group that most appropriate for them. I think the biggest change that's happened over the past 8 years was I really thought that when students came to my school, they would somehow be able to be sober for 30 days. And we had that in kind of our criteria to get in the beginning, is you had to be 30 days sober. But that just isn't the case. And if you have that criteria, in my opinion, in my school, it was really tough to get honesty for those kids to tell us, well, I had a relapse after I got out of treatment. Right. So once again, I kind of felt it set up a barrier for them to get there. So now when they come to us, what we found is a lot of them are actively using, but they have a willingness to drug test. They drug test if they're actively using and they're an active relapse, maybe, you know, 3 to 5 times a week. And they talk about it. And so they'll come in and they'll show me their track marks. Or they'll come in and share with me, this is what happened at a party, and here's some pictures that somebody saw, whatever. It just opens up honesty.
You know what's interesting to me? And, you know, this is, by the way, it's September. It's Recovery Month here in Massachusetts. That's a very big deal.
We all feel
here in the United States, right? We feel very proud of our accomplishments here in Massachusetts. We all meet up at the State House, and on the 21st, I believe, yeah. I'm actually going to be opening up the State House presentation this year for the fifth year in a row, I guess.
That's great.
Exciting. But I see all of the young people from the Recovery High School, and I hear their stories and how this kind of Recovery High School is so engagement-based that they feel so proud to be a part of this. Mm-hmm. It must feel good for you to see these success cases.
Well, the thing about these high schools is there's a common mission, and that is just to keep one another accountable and to keep each other on this earth. I think that really makes my job a lot easier, because I have this cadre of students and past students and former students and current students who their number one reason for being on this earth is to help their other students and their friends and their peers. So,
can I just add a little something from what I experienced when I went there? Because they read some of Guts, and then we spoke about it, and then we all had a big group meeting, and the whole school, we were talking, and one girl had said, you know, she'd been sober 8 hours, and one guy was sober 8 months, you know? And so I asked the kid who was sober 8 months, I said, doesn't that throw you that she's using? You know, is that hard for you? And he said, no, it inspires me. Because, you know, initially with the school, I imagined it to be basically, you know, rehab, but school, you know, like, you know, there's just zero tolerance and all blah, blah, blah. And what Michelle has really helped us at SLAM to understand, and what it really works from speaking to her graduates extensively, is what they're doing is they're planting seeds, you know. Some of these kids, because of their home life, whatever, they cannot get out of it. But this school, what makes it so different than an ordinary school is the love and attention and compassion shown to these kids. And it's just incredible. I mean, they're beautiful people.
Kristen, you mentioned Guts, and I want to take a minute to talk about your book. New York Times bestseller, You Don't Need Our Help, but I think it's touched probably a lot of people. The title is Guts, and I love the subtitle, The Endless Follies and Tiny Triumphs of a Giant Disaster. What spurred you on to write the book?
You know, I wrote it myself, by the way, which nobody does.
That's a big deal today.
You know. What inspired me? Well, you know, initially it was kind of like I hadn't been working for a while, and I didn't want to, like, get plastic surgery so I could look like a hot young thing. I just didn't know where I fit. You know, nowadays, character actresses, it's kind of it's a tiny field, you know. Yeah. It's like five people and, you know, one part a year maybe. So I thought, well, God, what am I going to do? I can't be a waitress, you know what I mean? I mean, I not that I'm above it. I did it for many years, but, you know, it would be just sort of mortifying. Like, John Lithgow was great. You know, can I bring would you like your steak medium rare, you know, kind of thing. So I thought, and then I, for whatever reason, I was speaking to someone, and I just sort of, they said, you should write a book. And so I thought about it. And then she said, you should write about your addiction. And I was like flabbergasted. I come from a very, very private family. And no one knew that I was, you know, had struggled ever, even though I was working very hard on the school at the time, too. But anyway, so I just started writing, and I just couldn't stop. And the whole story just poured out in a year and a half, you know.
And it's interesting because you came out in a very public way about your addiction, about your recovery. You've touched a lot of people with this book. I want to go to one of our callers.
Sure.
Karen, you're on the line with Kristen Johnston and Michelle Lipinski.
Hi, Kristen. I'm Michelle. This is Karen, a.k.a. Miss Playing.
Karen.
Hi, Kristen. I just wanted to tell Kristen how much her book meant to me, and it saved my life.
Wow.
I've read it three times. I've had a couple of relapses. Now I'm on just day 20, and it's really, really
Congratulations.
Hard.
Congratulations.
That's
good for you.
Great. The thing is, you know, I didn't write it to be an addiction book, you know. I wrote a book about, and, you know, I know it is an addiction book because a lot of it's about that, but my intention was to write, like, how does an old dog learn new tricks, you know? How do you change who you are at 40, you know? Or, I don't know, 38 I was at the time. How do you, every single moment, whether it's happy, sad, celebratory, depressed, you know, lonely, whatever it is, every moment is accompanied by alcohol or drugs. And so I just couldn't fathom my life without it. And so I guess sort of it's about, I thought it was going to be more about self-esteem and, you know, how do you find who you really are as opposed to specifically only addiction.
But I think there's a common theme among addicts and the shame of addiction.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, Michelle, do you see like teens come in with carrying a lot of those burdens, shame and guilt? And
I think stigma is what we see keeps these children sick. I think if they try to go back to their regular school, they have labels on them, and it almost forces them to hang out with those same people that they had before. And I think it feels for my students to go back to their regular schools and talk about recovery, there's those conversations don't even happen. So
right.
that's kind of an unfamiliar place that if you say, oh, I'm in recovery, they just all look at you. Even for teachers who are in recovery, they're
right.
Like, why are you saying that?
Because, Michelle, they see so much in the media about addiction. Can you comment on this?
Exactly. I mean, I think it's, you know, and Kristen can probably speak to it because she's written a couple of things also recently about this. But
yes.
I think it's just, it's so common for them to see young people portrayed in a way that seems glamorous if they're under the influence. So if you watch any kind of, you know, television or media, it's very glamorized.
So when you talk about recovery, they just kind of look at you kind of like, what does that mean?
Yeah. So even when we are going through airports and we always wear T-shirts that say consider sobriety or something recovery, it's almost like, oh, you poor things.
Right.
Like somebody's making you be sober. That's awful.
Right.
So we're trying to make it less stigmatizing to be in recovery.
As am I. And, you know, the thing the media has done, I mean, you know, that's why, you know, there's been this big stink bomb about these Kitson T-shirts. I don't know if you guys heard
yes.
about it.
Well,
yes,
we were talking about that. We weren't actually going to mention the name of them because we don't want to promote them, but we wanted to say congratulations to you.
I put the words SH instead of the K. So that's how I work it. No, but this store in LA that really sells to young people has been promoting these T-shirts that like glamorize Xanax and Adderall and Vicodin. And with the logo above, you know, just what the doctor ordered, and just stuff like that. Really, really obnoxious. And I was tweeting because a lot of, you know, people who've lost their kids, a lot of people who've lost their loved ones follow me on Twitter and Facebook, etc.
Can I interrupt you? Because we, Kristen, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we have to go to a commercial. But
are you kidding?
You brought up tweeting. We're going to bring up social media next as a function of this whole world that these kids live in.
We're going to go to our caller here, Michelle. I believe Helen, you're live on the air.
Hi, Michelle. It's Helen. How are you?
Great, Helen. How are you?
I'm delightful.
How's your son?
Michelle has just been a godsend for so many families on top of the students. Addiction is such a family disease. And to have a place our children can go and not constantly having them kicked out, being able to work with her and work with them on how to get treatment. A lot of times we have nowhere to turn. They have answers of where we can go, how we can get the treatment that we need for our kids. It's like pulling teeth trying to get treatment. So we all work in a collaboration, and we're almost like one big family. It's like one person's child, there's everybody's child at Recovery High. And Michelle just does the most phenomenal job.
Thank you, Helen.
Holding that all together. I can't say more. It's probably the only high school that high school students look forward to going back to.
That's quite an endorsement.
I saw that with my own eyes, definitely.
Yes, and my son is one of them who counted the days to when he could go back to school so he could be surrounded by, you know, other people who understood and could help him with any issues he has going on.
Just keep bringing the donuts, Helen. Just keep bringing us the donuts and the coffee.
I bribe the teachers quite frequently. Well, they actually deserve kudos, every teacher there. They give like 100,000%. And I've tried to start some fundraising this year so we can do activities with the kids to try to give them sober things to do on their time off, to try to avoid some of the parties they go to out of boredom.
So, thank you very much, Helen, by the way. It must be really tough to be a parent that has a child that needs your services. Michelle was blushing in here, weren't you?
It's just really hard for me to do.
It must be really great to hear that. I was wondering about... You know, I go on Facebook and I see some of this stuff, and I sound like a horribly old man right now because I am, but I see this stuff and I can't imagine what, you know, the pressure that's on these kids, that's put on these kids from social media. And Kristen was talking about tweeting, and that kind of brought it up in my mind. There's some numbers here. 75% of teens say pictures of teens partying with alcohol and marijuana on social networking sites encourages teens to want to do the same. Compared to teens who have not seen pictures on Facebook or another social networking site of kids getting drunk, passed out, or drugs, or using drugs, teens who have seen such pictures are 4 times likelier to have used marijuana, more than 3 times likelier to have used alcohol, and almost 3 times likelier to use tobacco.
But you know, John, what's interesting for me is how long is it going to take these kids to figure out that their parents are actually going to their Facebook sites, and they're learning all about what the kids are doing on the week.
The buck does stop with the parent. I mean, you know, parents should be able to see what their kids are doing, you know, until they're out of the house and they're paying their own rent. You know, they should get more involved. I'm not saying snoop. I'm saying with your kid, you know. Look, you know, you posting, you know, Uncle Tim and you guzzling beer from Thanksgiving, that is not appropriate. We have to take that down or whatever. You know, I mean, I do think it's a community-based issue. It's a parental issue. It's a, you know, the entire nation issue. But the thing that you guys have in Massachusetts that I'm so covetous of and so jealous is you actually do have support in the community and, you know, in City Hall. I mean, I've been trying for 5.5 years with my board to go in there. I've gone to 6 different meetings at City Hall, pitching to the Board of Ed, and they will not give us a yes. to just make the school, which we would fund through private donations. They won't do it.
I want to go to a question to Michelle real quick here. Michelle, let's talk about this, the problem with teens, this kind of normalizing, this normalization around substance use and drugs, you know, in the culture here, including, you know, the social media piece.
Yep. So, I mean, I think, I mean, and I have, we have our graduates, and I mean, we're all on Facebook with our former grad, of our former graduates. And what's really great is that we, as, you know, a recovery community and a, as an adolescent recovery community, if we see stuff on other people's Facebook, it's kind of like reverse peer pressure. So if somebody writes something about like, hey, just got really, really high, you'll see three or four of my students go like, hey, what are you talking about? Where were you? What were you doing? I mean, so it's really interesting because all the other posts that you see or the tweets are all glamorizing that use. Mm-hmm. And my daughter, who's 16, she'll be 16 in November, I see it all the time on her Facebook account too. And you just, I mean, I think it's really exactly what Kristen said. It's communication with your children and letting them know that, like, yeah, there's going to be kids using, and what tools are you using to not participate, or, you know, to give them the right information? Like, what do you say to your friends who you think, my biggest piece is, so what do you say to one of your friends who you think might have a problem? What do you say to them?
That's the whole, that was the whole fight. Sorry, if I may bring it back to the T-shirt extravaganza.
Sure.
So many people were like, why do you care? You know, most people were so on board. But people were like, why do you care? And, it, you know, freedom of speech and yada, yada. And I'm saying, look, this is glamorizing this. This is shoving this in their faces that it's cool and cute. And if there's a... You know, if it's on a T-shirt, you know what I mean? Yeah, go into your parents' cabinets and grab their drugs or whatever, you know.
And that's, I wanted to ask you, Kristen, you know, does the celebrity in our culture glamorize drug use for these kids?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think they make it look pretty bad, to be honest. I think the problem is no one glamorizes recovery.
That's
a good
point.
The real problem. I honestly think there are just
except for you, of course.
Well, because I make them. You know what I mean? I don't make them, but I'm saying I'm out of the closet, you know, so
right.
to speak. And I know very many incredibly, you know, really respected and established actors who are also in recovery and would, you know, their whole life is about no one finding out. Which
is,
you know,
there a stigma? Is there a stigma?
Yes.
Did you feel like if I do this, there's going to be a huge stigma attached to me? It's going to affect my career?
Yep.
Did you feel an obligation?
What'd you say?
Did you feel an obligation to come out?
Oh, it's such a tricky thing. You know, I just started writing it, and it just sort of, even though there was lots of family pressure not to do it and, you know, things like that, and I just had to. I don't know. I guess I'm just sick of it. I'm sick of being embarrassed about something that I have a disease. I'm think I'm kind of heroic for being sober. I don't think I should be punished or that there's anything embarrassing about being sober. I think it's something that is cool. You know, I don't think it's cool to use and then get sober. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying anybody who can fight depression or cancer or any kind of illness and come out and be even stronger and braver, it, you know, that's cool. That's a great thing.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's a very important point. If someone has diabetes, let's talk about it. Let's not be ashamed of it. You know, Michelle, I want to go back to the stigma piece. You know, because it's a very important piece. Do these young high school people, do they feel this whole piece around stigma?
Definitely. And I think, you know, your peers definitely identify who you are and who you hang out with and where you kind of fall into the culture of your school. Every school has a culture. So as soon as you're identified because of whether it's zero tolerance policies or, and I don't think a lot of educators understand their offhanded comments that they make, even in class, will ostracize that student. So there's a fair amount of bullying that goes along with that. So I think stigma just creates a really unsafe environment.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as you get that, as soon as you get identified as a kid who's a substance user, guess what? You're not going to undo that piece. And mm-hmm. so if you go to treatment and you come back, now you're not only, you know, a kid who has an identified issue, but you had to go away and it makes it even worse. And so, like I said, we're trying to reverse that and say it's really cool to not have that drug and alcohol issue anymore in your school. Mm. But I think the biggest piece, and Kristen, I thank you so much for being here, because I think that, you know, people perceive partying as so normalized. And even you see it with all that the new media that just came out from the VM, from the music awards the other night, and all that kind of, you know, for an actress or a person in who is a musician to come out and say, listen, we don't do that. That's not our culture anymore. Mm-hmm. Right. Really changes. And that's what I think we really have to talk about. It's okay to be sober. It's okay to be in recovery.
You know, when we come back from our next break, mm-hmm. we want to talk more about how to find help for your children. You know, it's a very important piece. Yeah. You know, we know that if we're talking to our children mm-hmm. on the average of 2 times a year, that it makes a difference. But if someone is already in need of help, mm-hmm. we want to talk about how do they find help. Michelle, I want to talk to you a little bit about solution here. Mm-hmm. If a parent is out there struggling, you know, how to, and they, you know, I'm sure you get a lot of phone calls. Mm-hmm.
So I think you hear a lot of misinformation. I think the biggest piece of having a young person or even anyone in trying to get them some support or some services is that you hear a lot of different information. And I think it's incredibly hard when you're incredibly challenging when you have somebody who's under the age of 18, because you can't just kick them out. You have to be responsible for them. So a lot of people will spend their entire life savings and send these children up to live on a mountain, and that's fine for them. We work with a lot of adolescents and families who would never be able to afford that. And when Massachusetts, I want to acknowledge, has amazing public treatment options, and we're very fortunate for that. But if you're at the beginnings of this and you're a parent and you're like, I think my kid's using, or, you know, look at the signs, look at the symptoms, look at their friends, look at their peer groups. You know, a lot of the kids, they'll delete all their messages. You're not going to see those messages on their Facebook, or you're not going to see the messages on their phone. So just really trust your instincts. I'm a huge fan of drug testing. If I think I have a drug test sitting on the top of my refrigerator. So when my children's kids, my friends come over, they're like, what's that? And she'll like, just so you know, my mom will call your mom and have you drug tested. So I think it's super important to have it clear and visible. But have it clear and have it visible. And I'm the one that who says, you know what, you know, on the soccer field, I'll talk about it.
But Michelle, we know as parents, and we should send that message out to parents, that you should never apologize for being a parent, first mm-hmm. off. But secondly, if you think that something is going on,
verify.
It's probably
99% of the time. 99. It's probably true.
Right, yeah. Right.
That's right.
So once that happens, I mean, I know what we do in New York. We send our kids to Boston to go to school.
Keep that on the down low, Kristen.
Yeah, there's
Keep
only
on the
so many seats. Kristen, what would you say to kids starting high school? What advice would you give them?
Oh, man. I would say, I guess I would, look, I partied in high school. I grew up in Milwaukee, and there was only booze around, you know, beer. So I'm not standing in judgment of anyone. However, I would say that what it does is, you don't want to peak in high school. I know everybody wants to be the winner and be the superstar and be like everybody, and then be the cheerleader or whatever. But the bottom line is those people always end up losers.
Yeah.
You know, the people who are winners, the people who have succeeded in life that I know personally, were all the quiet, shy, or weird, or talk too much, or, you know, were the freaks. So I would say, you know, don't, you know, to feel, because a lot of kids obviously drink the reason adults drink, which is to feel socially better. And the bottom line is, get over it. Feel a little socially awkward, because you're going to be a superstar in your 20s and 30s.
Right.
When you should be.
Right. You know, I want to let parents and teens know they can go online and find some help and info on drugs and alcohol abuse. I love the partnership at drugfree.org.
Yeah, they're great.
They're great. National
NIDAA.
And that's
great.
I was just about to say. You read my mind. We need to get Kristen up here in person on the show. We need to get her to Right Turn. She's one of us. And SAMHSA, too, Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. Those are...
And Learn to Cope.
Yeah, and Learn to Cope, which
and
is great.
Any parent organization.
Yeah. Al-Anon, any parent.
Hey, can I just say really quick, if anybody's ever, you know, if anybody listening is interested in reading or, you know, think about, you know, trying to get one in New York for whatever reason, please come on to slamnyc.org. There's a lot of stuff. There's a poem from, there's some information that Michelle has given. There's pictures of, there's a lot about North Shore on the website as well. And a poem one of the teachers wrote about kids and addiction that's just so powerful. And we'd love to have you come on. So
thank you, Kristen.
Thank you so much, Kristen. We love your book. We'd love you to come up and visit.
Well, if I'm in Boston, I'm there.
Okay, we're going to hold you to that. And
she could do an actor's workshop.
She could do an actor's workshop at Right Turn for us. There's a lot of.
Oh my God, I'd love to do that.
We would love to have you.
Oh my God, I'd love to. And, you know, I teach at NYU.
Oh, get out.
I swear.
We got to get you here.
Get your butt up here.
Get your butt up here, as Michelle says. Kristen, thanks so much. Her book,
it's
Guts.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. And she's working with Slam NYC, trying to get a recovery. Trying to get a recovery high school in New York City. We have someone here, Michelle. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Michelle Lipinski, principal of North Shore Recovery High School in Beverly, Massachusetts. Thanks so much for being on the show.
You're welcome.
You know, I mean, it's an interesting piece because, you know, I mean, it came up earlier, John, that, you know, what do you do with your kid? Do you just throw them out and say, you know, you're out of here no matter what age? And you know, as an interventionist, I want to say the answer is no. You offer them help.
That's right.
You say, I will give you some help. If you make a decision not to accept help, well, then there's probably going to be a different conversation that we're going to have because, you know, it's our house. It's our home. It's our rules. But we want to help you. We don't just want to throw you out on the street,
That's
you know.
Great.
Michelle, thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Right Turn Radio podcast. Please check us out on Facebook and at www.right-turn.org.